Hello everyone, Aaron here. In this audio recording, I want to talk a little bit about some of the words and phrases that Dan and I used in our conversation about crying and laughing. The first is, cry me a river. This is what Dan says to me. He says, Aaron, cry me a river. And what that means is he is commanding me or ordering me to cry heavily, profusely, right? With lots of tears. To cry very strongly is to cry someone a river. But that is not the normal way that this idiom is used. Usually, we use this idiom in a sarcastic way to tell someone to stop complaining. So if someone is complaining too much, you can turn to them and say, cry me a river, which means, I'm tired of hearing you complain. Stop complaining. So imagine that you're at work and you have a project to do with another coworker. And the coworker shows up in the morning and he says, oh, I'm really tired. I don't want to work on the project today. I was up very late last night and I had lots to do and I didn't get much sleep and I just don't feel like working today. And you can say, oh, cry me a river, John. Right? We've got lots of work to do. Let's get started, right? I don't want to hear you complain. Cry me a river. Now, there are numerous ways to refer to the act of crying, and one of them, I mention a few lines later, is bawl, B-A-W-L. It sounds like ball, like a soccer ball, but it's spelled differently. So to bawl also means to cry heavily, strongly, loudly. Right? So if someone's really upset, they may bawl. And in fact, they may bawl their eyes out. There's an idiom there. You cry so hard that your eyes come out of their sockets, to bawl your eyes out. Right? The little girl was so upset that she lost her favorite toy. She bawled her eyes out for the rest of the afternoon. She cried very, very loudly. She bawled her eyes out. Have you ever bawled your eyes out? Now, a less strong way to refer to crying is to shed a tear. And in fact, sometimes this means to just cry very lightly, to shed a tear. You know, to shed means to get rid of or let go of. And a tear, not many tears, but a tear, shed a tear. It just means cry, or cry very lightly, or maybe just get teary-eyed and one or two tears drop out of your eyes, right? You shed a tear. Sometimes sentimental movies will make us shed a tear, or the thought of a loved one who passed away many years ago might make you shed a tear. Okay, so that's what that means. It just means cry, or cry lightly. Now, a little bit later in the conversation, Dan mentions another idiom, which is to pull at people's heartstrings. So if something pulls at your heartstrings, what does that mean? Well, if you imagine literally your heart being attached to some long strings, and whenever someone pulls one of those strings, it elicits an emotional reaction in you. You feel moved when something pulls at your heartstrings, emotionally moved to cry or to feel sadness or maybe sympathy or empathy. It pulls at your heartstrings. When you see a little tiny cute kitten abandoned on the side of the road, that's the kind of thing that might pull at your heartstrings, and you feel a sense that you want to help that little kitten. It pulls at your heartstrings. Many situations, people, events can pull at your heartstrings and cause you to cry. Has anything pulled at your heartstrings recently? All right, moving on a little bit. There's a sentence that I say when we're talking about crying. Dan's talking about his daughter not crying outside the home, but crying often inside the home. And, of course, as Dan and I often do, we joke around, and I said to Dan, well, she lives with you. Of course. I mean, I'd be crying all the time if I was living with you. And, obviously I'm being sarcastic. I'm just poking at Dan and making fun of the situation. But I want you to pay attention to the sentence, I'd be crying all the time, I would be crying all the time if I was living with you. So if I was living with you, I would be crying all the time. Now contrast that with, if I were living with you, I would be crying all the time. Or, I would be crying all the time if I were living with you. What's the difference? I actually had this question recently in our forum. What's the difference between using was and were in this kind of unreal conditional sentence? Well, the answer is there's really no difference in meaning, but there is a small difference in the connotation and the feeling of using were versus using was. Really, the when you use were in this kind of sentence, it has a very proper sounding connotation. It sounds very proper. It sounds very nice. It sounds very educated. It sounds more formal. I'd be crying all the time if I were living with you, right? That's the kind of thing that, you know, a British method actor might say on the stage of a play. But, you know, I'm not that. I'm hanging out with my good friend Dan, and that it reveals my mindset. I'm in a casual situation. I'm joking around, and I use was, which is a little bit more appropriate because was has a very casual sounding meaning. It even in some cases, if I were using that in a context of, let's say, an academic conference or in a professional meeting, it might come across as being a little bit crude or not so erudite sounding, not so nice. So you should be aware that both are okay, was or were, but were is more proper, was is more casual, more colloquial. Okay, so moving on. Actually, the very next thing Dan says is, yeah, she's got to look at this mug. So he's responding to my little joke about her crying all the time because she's living with him. And he says, yeah, she's got to look at this mug. So mug commonly means drinking cup. We drink coffee out of a mug. But it's also used to mean face, and not just any kind of face. It generally means a very plain looking or even somewhat ugly face. You talk about someone's mug, you know don't have a picture in your mind of a beautiful face. It's kind of either a plain or homely or kind of ugly looking face. My ugly mug. And in fact, we often put the adjective ugly in front of mug. Your ugly mug, my ugly mug, his ugly mug. And in fact, I read this on the internet, so it's not necessarily true, but what I read was that drinking cups back in the 17th and 18th centuries commonly had the images of human faces drawn on them or even molded into them. So the mugs, the drinking mugs, actually looked like human faces. I don't know if that's true. But it would explain why we refer to faces as mugs these days. And you'll also hear the term mugshot, which is a photo of someone's face. And generally, we use it when we're talking about criminals who are arrested for a crime and they are taken in and their photo is taken from the front and from the side. Those are called mugshots, right? Mugshots. If you go to a nice studio and have your picture taken by a professional photographer, you wouldn't call that a mugshot. You would call that a portrait. So that's a mug. That's a mug. All right, moving on. I want to just briefly mention the term cathartic. This is what Dan says. He says, I totally buy that part of the research. Buy meaning, not literally buy, but he believes. He believes that part of the research. He buys it. He buys that part of the research saying that it's cathartic for many people. So this term cathartic basically describes anything that provides some kind of psychological relief through the expression of emotion, strong emotion, openly, open expression of emotion. And in doing so, the idea is that you get out all those tensions and all those feelings that are wrapped up in the issue at hand, and by expressing them, you come to terms with them. You get rid of them. It's cathartic. And so the act itself is a catharsis, but the adjective is cathartic. And so think, what are some cathartic activities? Well, there are many cathartic activities. For example, singing or maybe dancing, certainly laughing and crying and moaning. And, you know, some people say exercises can be cathartic, or a good long conversation with a close friend. That can be cathartic as well. So, yeah, that's what that term means, cathartic. Okay, just a few more here. Towards the very end of the conversation, Dan's talking about elephants. And when an elephant dies in the family, I guess you could say, the other elephants hang near the body. That little phrasal verb there, hang near. Well, to hang is really short for hang around or hang out or hang about. It means just to stay in that area. You hang around there. You hang out there. And then, of course, nearby, not far away. You hang out nearby. You hang near. So that's maybe not such a common phrasal verb, but I wanted to point that out. The elephants hang around near the body. And then a couple of lines later, Dan says, well, on that note, until next time. So I wanted to point your attention to the phrase on that note. And this is something that comes actually from music, a musical note, on that note. So a note has a certain tone to it, and that tone can elicit certain feelings. So if we kind of think of our conversation as a musical performance, the very last thing that was said, that's that note. If we move on to a different conversation topic, it will take on a new note, right? Just like a musical performance or a melody. So we say this at the end of something, at the end of a conversation or at the end of, you know, a performance or at the end of an activity. We can say, okay, well, on that note, let's end this meeting, or on that note, let's get out of here. Or, well, on that note, let's wrap this thing up. Let's finish our conversation. Or you could even say something like, wow, well, that's not such a nice note to end on. Let's talk about something more positive before we say goodbye, something like that. So, yeah, you'll often hear this at the very end of a conversation. All right, and speaking of ends of conversations, we are to our very last this is actually an idiom that Dan mentions at the very end of the conversation. He says, don't count your chickens before they hatch. And, I wanted to point this out because it just doesn't make any sense what he's doing here. I wanted to make it clear that, yes, there is no connection between that idiom and any of the other things we were talking about. He just sort of humorously spat it out or threw that out there into the conversation because I guess we had earlier been talking about chickens and he wanted to say something funny. But notice my response. I said, because if you do, you'll be crying. And that was my attempt to connect it back to the main topic of our conversation, which is crying and laughing. Of course, don't count your chickens before they hatch. You've probably heard that many times. And it basically means if you have, let's say, 10 eggs in a basket, and you cannot count on having 10 healthy chickens in the near future because you don't know what's going to happen between the present moment and the time when those chicks would be born. So you don't want to be making plans for the future until you're sure that you actually have those 10 chickens that you can sell or that you can grow for eggs and meat and things like that. You need to, you know, be careful, be more careful. Don't count your chickens before they hatch. You might not have as many as you think. Okay, so don't count your chickens before they hatch. All right, please, if you ever have any questions or want further examples of these phrases, idioms, vocab terms, post your questions in the forum. That's the best place, the forum in our members area, for getting some responses from us or from other members. And remember, if you have a question, there's probably many other people who have questions. Okay, enjoy. I'll talk to you soon.